Good morning, Connecticut, and to our friends across the Sound. It's John Vocat, Director of Public Affairs. Thanks for tuning into our award-winning For the People, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. This morning, as in years past, we'll be bringing you a number of conversations we gathered at the 2018 Parent Empowerment University, which is presented annually by the Newtown Parent Connection. This gathering brings together experts to help parents, educators, and those who care about the well-being of our young people to learn some of the most effective ways to support and communicate with them about prevention and giving them the tools they need to help avoid becoming involved in substance abuse and addiction. We'll open up speaking with the organization's founder and the main organizer for this year's Parent University, and then head out to speak with several presenters on subjects ranging from the practice of tapping to nutrition and healthy eating to the critical importance of building and fostering positive, deep, and nurturing relationships within families and schools. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vocat, right after these reminders. Working smoke alarms in a home can cut the risk of death by half, and the American Red Cross is seeking people to volunteer their time and help save lives in the Sound the Alarm Home Fire Safety and Smoke Alarm Installation event coming up on April 28th in New Haven from 8 to 2. Sound the alarm in New Haven and be part of the nationwide Red Cross effort to help reduce the number of deaths and injuries from home fires. Volunteer signups are available for both individuals and teams. Grab your friends and family and help make a difference together. All you need to do is go to soundthealarm.org/Connecticut. We also want to remind you that the Yale Griffin Prevention Research Center at Griffin Hospital in Derby is seeking volunteers for a study on retinopathy. The study opened to anyone over 18 years of age who has not had an eye exam for at least a year. Further eligibility will be assessed before the eye screenings. Participants will have a free eye exam in which images of their eyes are taken, and an eye specialist will review the images for any signs of diseases or conditions, specifically retinopathy, which usually does not have any symptoms. Retinopathy is a common eye disease in the United States and is a leading cause of blindness. People with certain conditions are at risk for developing retinopathy and should be screened every year. To see if you qualify or for more information, call 203-732-1265, extension 223, or just click on griffinhealth.org. And don't forget, coming up at noon on Sunday, April 29th at Listman's Landing in Milford, it's the Rape Crisis Center of Milford's annual Walk a Mile in Her Shoes event. This is part of a nationwide series of walks inviting men to join the efforts of women to make the world a safer place. Men, women, families, neighbors, colleagues, and teams participate in this one-mile stroll to raise awareness around issues of rape, sexual assault, and gender violence. All men are asked to wear women's shoes, high heels, ballerina slippers, flip-flops, fuzzy slippers. Use your imagination. Anyone can register, although children under 12 must be accompanied by an adult. Once registered, you'll receive a walk packet. You can begin collecting donations for your walk by asking friends, neighbors, colleagues, relatives, and others to sponsor you by donating money to the Rape Crisis Center of Milford. Or you can register online. If you raise at least $25, you'll get a walk t-shirt. Just go to rapecrisiscenterofmilford.org for more details. Well, we're here in Newtown this morning on the road and doing a part of our program from the 2018 Parent Empowerment University, or Parent University as they call it for short. And we're here today with an old and dear friend as well as a brand new friend. Dori Carolyn is with us. She's been a voice on this program probably upwards of 8 or 10 times over the past 10 or 12 years. And we've actually done entire broadcasts here from Parent University over the years. I think this is our third, maybe our fourth. It's great to be here, Dori. We're also pleased to make the acquaintance of Brooke Pachenko, and she is the Parent University Committee Chair and a volunteer for the organization. So we'll speak with her in just a couple minutes. But for now, let's talk with our dear friend, Dori. Dori, thanks for having us here on the occasion of this Parent Empowerment University. How many is this for you?
This is our seventh year of offering Parent University. Unfortunately, we ran against the march, and it's so sad because the keynote speaker today Mark Brackett was phenomenal, and we will be airing it. So hopefully people who weren't able to make it will be able to watch it on their TVs at home.
Yeah. And folks that are listening will hear a little bit of what he had to say, because we're going to have a little clip with him as well on our broadcast. So and hopefully folks will seek him out. He's certainly well known in school districts across the state and around the globe, as we're hearing. And perhaps folks will hear something of what you say about him or he says on this show that will inspire them to bring his concepts to their school district. But let's go back in time a little bit for folks who may not have heard prior broadcasts. Tell us just a little bit about the Parent Connection.
Parent Connection was started back in 93 when my son Brian was in the throes of his addiction. And it started out as a small support group where people had questions and people were experiencing problems with their children, either dabbling or really addicted to drugs. And we would get together and just kind of embrace one another and talk about what we could do, how we can get the word out as to what was happening. Since our children were using, we knew that other people's children were using. My son, Brian, passed away in 1999 from a prescription overdose. And then in 2003, we really started the program again. We became a not-for-profit, and we really began with educational programs because we felt that while the support groups are extremely important, we really needed to get into the community and educate people. And I think today, when we talk about drug deaths, overdoses, I think Newtown has been in a pretty good place in comparison to different towns in the state of Connecticut. And I think that's basically because our parents, our community, is educated about substance abuse. So this is our seventh parent university, and we were lucky enough to recruit some new people, one of which was Brooke, who brought so much time, so much energy to the program. The speakers that we have were amazing, and we will go into, Brooke will elaborate on that. But I know that it's really important that we work with parents with the younger children. If we can do prevention and instead of reacting to a situation where we have an epidemic here, there is an epidemic in the country, but I think that Newtown is really proactive. We have a lot of forums coming up. We have one coming up in May for seniors, May 4th at the Senior Center on opioid addiction and prevention also as to what they should be doing with some of the drugs that they have at home, which are over-the-counter drugs. And then we have another forum on in May, which is the 15th of May, at Newtown High School, and we will be working with the families or the caregivers of seniors. So lots of great things happening. Anybody who is experiencing any kind of questions about their child or a loved one's abuse or addiction, they can contact us. We run Hope and Support meetings in Fairfield every Wednesday evening from 7 to 9.
And those are for parents or caregivers whose surviving loved one is in addiction or in some sort of recovery program?
Yes. And then we run one in Newtown on Thursdays from 7 to 9 at the offices of Newtown Parent Connection. Both of them, you can find it on our website at www.newtownparentconnection.org, and you can get the addresses and directions to the offices. We also run a bereavement group on the first Wednesday of each month, and that is facilitated by a licensed therapist, and it's for anyone who has lost a loved one to substance abuse or who has lost a child to a catastrophic event.
And finally, before we meet Brooke, you have also, this is by no means a Newtown-centric initiative. You have both offered your expertise and resources and have been embraced by a growing number of other communities in Western Connecticut and have made national connections with this initiative.
It's just amazing. I think the last month was our busiest month. We have received phone calls from Atlanta, from Arizona, from Washington, D.C. I've gone into Woodbridge, has invited us to speak in their town. We have people coming up from White Plains, and they're looking to put in a similar organization down in White Plains. So it's really, really has taken off. I have had 2 days this month where within a 36-hour period, I received 11 phone calls. Two were for deaths, and 9 were for help. So our name is out there. People are looking for support, which is a good thing. And we're going to keep doing what we've been doing for all these years.
NewtownParentConnection.org is the website?
Yes.
Very good. Folks, if you're interested and you're listening out there and there's something that the Newtown Parent Connection might be able to do for you, or if you'd like to be a partner or perhaps learn how to bring a parent university to your town, school district, or community, then perhaps you give Dory a call.
One thing I just really want to emphasize is that there's no reason for anyone to be afraid to walk through the doors of a support group. I can guarantee you that once you walk through, you will walk out at the end of the night feeling much better than you did when you walked in. It's a long journey. It's a journey that involves the entire family, and you need to be with people who can support you.
Yeah, don't take yourself all the way to the door and then turn around because of a fear of the unknown, I guess, right?
That's correct.
Very good. Brooke Pachinko, we have crossed paths a couple of times, but I never had the pleasure of chatting with you. Tell us what brought you, first of all, to a parent university. What is it about the parent connection, I should say, that resonated with you and made you want to devote your volunteerism to this cause?
Hi, thanks for having me here. So actually, I was an attendant at Parent University back in 2012. I had two daughters at that time, and the oldest was in preschool, and I received the material, and I thought, this really spoke to me. I am a teacher and an administrator, and so I know so much about child development, but using that knowledge and applying it in my home as a parent was a much bigger challenge. So I attended Parent University in 2012, and I stopped Dory in the hallway, who's a family friend, and I said, I want to get involved. I was really overwhelmed by the speakers that day about how I was inspired. So many different seeds were planted in my brain about what am I going to go home and do? What small changes can I do that will have a lasting effect on raising my young girls? So fast forward to about 2016, I became an official board member for Newtown Parent Connection, and I knew that my role on the board would be in education, and that's exactly what Parent University is. So I was excited to get into the content of Parent University and to talk to different parents in the community. What are the needs? Where do you feel your strengths are as a parent, and where are you lacking? What's the information that you find yourself searching for? And so together with that feedback, we started to talk to different experts in the area. We really wanted to tap into local businesses. This is an opportunity for them to shine, for them to offer their expertise and promote their businesses. And so I worked with each individual speaker to come up with a workshop that would really hone in on what Dr. Brackett spoke about, an emotion revolution, how our emotional intelligence is actually what drives our success. We can, in a very simply put manner, somebody can be the the smartest kid in class, but if they're not happy, that's not successful. So we started to build, we have a total of 8 workshops today being held both morning and afternoon. Mm-hmm. We have a dynamic team from Yale that's here. So Dr. Mark Brackett brought two professors with him, Dr. Stern and Catherine Lee. They were talking about building resilience in the practice of self-compassion. The parents need to first take care of themselves, to first understand their emotions, because they are the role model for their children. We have Leah De Cesare, Naked Parenting. She is an early educator. So she talks to parents from birth, into the, I want to say maybe early elementary age. But in fact, I was in her classroom this morning, and she's got parents who have older children. She's able to break it down into seven keys of parenting to apply across all developmental ages. A new topic, I think, for Parent University was nutrition. And so there's such a big push marketing-wise about organic foods. More families are gardening. We wanted to bring in a nutritionist and a naturopath, so they are speaking together, whole foods for a thriving family, how, in fact, making those healthy choices at home helped with the emotional regulation. The tapping solution, I'm sorry, I didn't mention that was Dr. Bassio and Kathy Snyder, mm-hmm. who are doing the nutritional piece. We have Alex and Karen Ortner here today from the Tapping Solution. That's in Sandy Hook. They establish their foundation post Sandy Hook tragedy. And the Tapping Solution is really an incredible, we had a lot of excitement about this, an incredible ancient method of helping to relieve stress and anxiety. We also have Dr. Roseanne Kapana-Hodge, who has her local practice in town. She's speaking today on supporting the struggling learner, so picking up on cues from your child in nursery school all the way to a high schooler who may have an individualized education plan. We also have John Hamilton today, who's joined us. He's talking about the commonly used drugs today, informing parents because they don't know, and simply how to talk to your children about drugs. Mm-hmm. We have Tracy Micella, who is here talking about teens are ninjas, not civilians. She's really talking about the emotional roller coaster with teens and breaking that down, what that looks like from a biosocial model. Mm-hmm. And finally, we have Charlie Manos. The title of his workshop is Connection, Compassion, and Communication, working as a team, because there's so many different adults that are crossing paths with children every day, working with teachers and whatnot.
So not just based on the immersion you had as a participant in Parent University, but also now as a leader of the Parent Connection Board and a intricate organizer of this year's Parent University, what would you say to your fellow educators or community members across the state of Connecticut about the importance of what an organization like the Parent Connection could bring to their community?
Okay. Socially, politically, we're at a crossroads. There's a lot of discomfort out there. And in no matter what arena you're in, people are talking about mental health. People are talking about violence. And Newtown Parent Connection is one place that we bring it home. We bring it back to your particular home. What's happening in your home to build resilient children? Where's the breakdown? Dory mentioned probably the most important word, prevention. When we can take an opportunity like this to educate young families, we are hoping to prevent children from seeking drug abuse as a coping strategy. So pulling in all community members to be able to identify things earlier on or identify the struggling child so that they don't seek that as a coping mechanism, drugs as a coping mechanism.
So in closing, these days, it's sad to say that everybody doesn't know just somebody who has an issue with drugs, addiction, opioids. Sadly, it's getting to the point where everybody knows some buddies who are coping with it, whether it's the addict themselves, the caregivers, the loved ones, the workplace, the employer. How has Parent connection and what you've learned over the years at Parent University and from the speakers helped you help your circle of influence and your peer group and your connections versus how you may have responded to them or supported them prior to ever knowing anything about the parent connection?
It's so important that people realize, you know, as you said, we all know someone. It's nothing to be embarrassed about. It's a real issue affecting so many people we know. And I think Dori painted that picture before when you asked her, bring yourself over the threshold of the door. Come in. Ask for help. You have to be able to put that aside. There's no pride in it. People are wired to go down that path. But if people feel strong enough and supported enough by organizations such as ours to ask for help, there's so many opportunities for us to provide it, so many different pathways. So I guess I think that's probably the most important message, something that I've learned, that people need to put aside the pride, the guilt, and be able to attend to the issue, to attend to the problem.
So the addict certainly didn't do something morally wrong by becoming an addict, and certainly the loved ones of that addict have nothing to be afraid of, and in fact should be running toward help and not trying to sequester themselves away from it.
Correct. It's an issue that, as you said, everybody's facing. We know somebody. If you go to our homepage right now, there's somebody holding up a card in front of their face that says help. Pull that label down. Put your face there. Ask for help. That's the best thing you can do for yourself if you are suffering, or for a family member or friend.
Right. NewtownParentConnection.org is the website if you'd like to find out more about what the Parent Connection could do or assist you to do in your community. Please get in touch. We're thankful to be invited here to the 2018 Parent Empowerment University at the Newtown Middle School. Dori Carolyn was with us. We spoke with her earlier. She's the founder of the Newtown Parent Connection, as well as the Parent University Committee Chair, Brooke Pachenko. Thanks, guys, for having us today. Well, let's go talk to some of the fantastic presenters. All right, back into a quiet place with Alex and Karen Ortner. They are here at the Parent Empowerment University for the Newtown Parent Connection, presenting today on the Tapping Solution for Parents, Children's, and Teenagers. So, Alex, I guess the first question is for folks that may think this is a some sort of a dance class.
Yes.
This is not tapping with the feet.
Correct. That is correct. Tapping is actually tapping on different meridian points of the body to send calming signals to the body to actually relax. So it's not nothing to do with the dancing.
So, Karen, how is it that you and Alex have come across this as a professional pursuit?
Well, I have a private practice, and they have the Tapping Solution as well. It's a whole family business, and it works really well just to help as many people as we can and bring tapping out to as many people.
So starting young, I guess, is a good thing. And there's also a children's book that's being touted in the introduction. It's called Gorilla Thumps and Bear Hugs. Is that your doing it?
Correct. Yeah. Gorilla Thumps and Bear Hugs is my book. It's a great way to introduce children to tapping. So it takes a lot of the tapping points that we teach adults, and it gives them fun animal names for each one to introduce them to it so they can do it going forward.
Great. So you're going to be talking about adults, children, and teenagers. Tell me a little bit of the difference between applying the same type of practice to someone in a different age group and the impact it might have, or some of the dynamics or differences between using tapping for a very young child versus an anxious or angst-ridden teen or the parent that then has to say goodnight to that teen and go into their own bedroom and deal with it.
Yeah, I mean, the number one thing we talk about is actually not to start with the kids. It's to start with the parents, because it's the parents' stress, overwhelm, anxiety that has the biggest effect on the family environment. And so first and foremost, you want to tap for the parent. And then in tapping with the kids, it's really different in terms of how we introduce it to an elementary schooler, a middle schooler, a high schooler. The younger they are, the easier it's going to be to introduce it to them. And the older they are, as they get into middle school, high school, it'll depend on the kid and how open they are to doing it. But we always say, make it fun, introduce it to them in a fun way, so that, and go to where they are on what they want to work on. Try and solve a problem that they're having so they can see it works, and then you can help them on other issues.
Great. And from a physiology standpoint, could you just illustrate the cause and effect of tapping a little bit more, you know, for a radio audience?
Sure.
Just illustrate kind of a little bit more what it is and how it works, and also a little bit about the success that you've seen, especially here in Newtown and Sandy Hook with this population that has faced such incredible trauma.
Sure. So one of the underlying things about tapping, and the reason why we tap on these meridian points of our body, is it sends a calming signal to the amygdala of the brain. So the amygdala is the fight or flight response center. So as the fight or flight response center gets triggered, and obviously in our community with what happened in Sandy Hook, there was a lot of trauma that was triggered with that. And so what we do with, by tapping on these endpoints of meridians of our bodies, we actually send a calming signal to the amygdala to let it know that it's safe. And so that's the reason we tap on it. And we've used it a lot in the community with first responders, with police officers, with teachers and students, to help them to deal with the trauma, the stress, the anxiety that they have dealt with in the community, both from what happened here and from just everyday life. And so that's what we do with the tapping.
Lunch?
And Alex and Karen Ortner, before we send you away, just is this a something that is derived from something of an ancient art, or is this something of a more relatively modern concept?
So we describe it as a combination of ancient Chinese acupressure and modern psychology. So the acupressure points in acupuncture has been around for thousands of years. And what we do with the tapping process is we combine it with modern psychology and the understanding of how the brain works, how the body works, and that's where the phrasing and the language that we do with the tapping comes into place.
Great. And how do people learn more about you?
To learn more about it, you can go to thetappingsolution.com.
Thanks very much. Alex and Karen Ortner are presenting today at the Parent Empowerment University for the Newtown Parent Connection. Their talk today is The Tapping Solution for Parents, Children, and Teenagers. Thank you guys for being here today in the hometown, and hopefully folks will be in touch with you to learn more about that. Thanks.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots causes that would love to have your support. You can learn about many of them through Love CT. Just go to our radio station website, hit the event guide tab, and click on to Love CT to help the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. Love CT also has funds to donate to a local charity. If you're part of or know of an organization in Connecticut and would like to be a beneficiary of the Love CT fund, submit your request at lovect.org. Look for Love CT all over Connecticut and get involved. Love CT is powered by Allied Building Products, Planet Fitness, and Chip's Family Restaurant. Learn more at lovect.org. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. Connecticut's Mission of Mercy, often referred to as CT Mom, is a free two-day dental clinic that provides free dental care to underserved and uninsured Connecticut residents. The Connecticut Foundation for Dental Outreach, in collaboration with the Connecticut State Dental Association, began offering free dental care through the Mission of Mercy project in 2008. This year, CT Mom will be at Torrington High School on April 20th and 21st. Clinic doors open at 8 a.m. on both days, and individuals can be a CT Mom patient if they do not have enough money to pay for dental care or if they do not have a medically compromising condition that will prohibit them from receiving care. Adults and children are welcome at CT Mom. However, no child under the age of 18 will receive treatment unless they're accompanied by their parent or legal guardian. Personal identification and documentation is not required, however. CT Mom provides cleanings, extractions, fillings, limited root canals, oral health education, pre- and post-treatment medications, and x-rays. Attendees are asked to bring a list of all current medications, and on the day of the clinic, be sure to take medications according to prescriptions. Due to possible extended wait times, it's advisable to bring things to pass the time, such as reading materials, knitting, or crossword puzzles. Attendees should also bring water, food, or snacks. Patients are seen on a first-come, first-served basis, and due to the number of patients seen at CT Mom, volunteers may not be able to treat every dental problem that may present. In most cases, interpreters will be available to assist patients that speak languages other than English, and sign language interpreters will also be available to assist hearing-impaired patients. To learn more and for information on how to volunteer or donate to this important event, visit cfdo.org/CTMom.
All right. Well, we're here now in the noisy cafeteria, but appropriately with the two presenters here that are talking about nutrition. The workshop here at the 2018 Parent University is Keeping It Real, Whole Foods for a Thriving Family. That is not a commercial sponsoring or any type of advocacy for a particular retailer of foods, but Dr. Deb Bossio is with us, as is Kathy Snyder, and Dr. Bossio is a naturopathic doctor and nutritionist.
Nutritionist and health coach.
So let's start Dr. Bossio. Doctor, tell us a little bit about what you're presenting today.
Hi there, I'm Dr. Deb Bossio. I'm a naturopathic doctor. I practice in Ridgefield but live here in Newtown. We're going to be presenting about the importance of food and how food affects our health, both physical and mental health, and how eating a whole foods diet, and again, not whole foods like the store, but whole foods meaning real foods as they grow in nature, plant-based foods, trying to steer away from our packaged and processed foods and sugar, and talking about what the effects of sugar are on our body and our mind, how sugar may be affecting our kids even in the classroom, and then giving really good tips on how to steer your diet in the right direction by eating whole foods. And then Kathy will be talking about some real great tips on implementing that, food planning and shopping and things of that sort.
So tell us, it seems like folks over the past 5-10 years of starting to get it more. School systems are starting to introduce farm-to-table initiatives more frequently, not widespread perhaps, but at least even some major food, institutional food services are beginning to get the idea that it's not only important but responsible to begin starting to factor in more healthy things. If a parent wanted to start on the path toward the right thing to do in the nutrition of their family and their loved ones, what would you say is probably either an easy or a way that the recipients find it most accessible to begin taking a healthier turn in their diet?
Sure. Well, I'd say one of my biggest pieces of advice would be, before you're eating a food or feeding it to your child, think about, can you picture this food growing in nature? Is it something that you can see growing in the ground, coming off a tree, or is it something that was formulated in a lab somewhere? Look at the actual ingredient labels. If there are a whole bunch of ingredients that you don't recognize, real long names that are you can't pronounce, chances are it's not really meant to be food, and that is something that is... you know, more and more of our food supply is not real food. So I would say steering towards things that grow in nature. I give a lot of tips in our talk today. One of them is eating the rainbow. So trying to think about eating foods from all the different natural color groups. So there are reds and greens and yellows, and all those different color groups provide different nutrients, different vitamins and minerals. So if you're eating a broad spectrum of color in your diet, natural color, you know you're getting a lot of different varied vitamins and minerals. And then a large part of the talk today is on sugar and really taking a look at how much sugar you are consuming in your diet. And sometimes it's surprising where sugar is hidden. We know the sweets, the ice creams, cookies, and candies, but, you know, what's in our soups and our salad dressings and our ketchup and all those other places as well. Sugar finds its way into most packaged and processed foods nowadays.
The other thing I've been learning and hearing a lot more about, especially in the past few years, is this idea that sugar substitutes are actually promoting weight gain and have myriad other health implications. When I was growing up, saccharin was the enemy, you know, cancer causing and such. It was just kind of the general rule of thumb, and that was one of the only sugar substitutes that was available at the time. My family were big honey users, so you know, I guess we got started off on the right track. But can you talk a little bit about the downside of substituting sugar for some other type of, as you said, sweetener that was made in a laboratory?
Right, absolutely. Yeah, the sugar substitutes, I would say, are just as bad, maybe even worse than sugar. Certainly, they're known to be carcinogenic, cancer-promoting. They do put us still on a blood sugar roller coaster throughout the day, contribute to obesity, contribute to inflammation, cardiovascular disease. So I think it is, again, better to go back to the real food. And when it comes to sugar, there are some natural sources of sugar that are okay. Honey, as you mentioned, fruit, dried fruits, using these as our sweeteners in products that we make at home.
How about agave?
Agave is, again, more of a natural whole sugar, per se. It still will cause blood sugar, you know, it will raise your blood sugar and cause some fluctuation. I'd say it's maybe not quite as good as honey or fruit. It's a little further down the line towards...
And stevia is the other thing that's beginning to show up commercially.
Absolutely.
As an additive. They're proud of... It's stevia instead of sugar.
Right. And that, I think, has a lot of people confused. So stevia is a natural food product. It's a plant. It happens to be an extremely sweet-tasting plant. I think it is an okay sugar sweetener, as opposed to your Splendas and NutraSweets, which are truly artificial. Okay. Stevia has some reasonable health benefits. I think what gets people confused is now it's in little packets that look just like the Splenda and NutraSweet.
And it's the green, not the yellow. The pink,
right,
the
and so they assume it may be an artificial sweetener, but it is actually natural, and I think it's an okay alternative.
Super. Well, let's let you eat the rest of your healthy lunch, Dr. Masio, and turn to your nutritionist partner, who's presenting today at the 2018 Parent Empowerment University here at Newtown Middle School. Kathy Snyder's a nutritionist. And Kathy, how about for you? Is there a secret weapon in terms of a vegetable or a fruit or some component of a healthy diet that folks are not utilizing as much as maybe they should? Or did you have any particular good standbys that you find are an excellent way to begin introducing more healthy vitamin and mineral packed foods into the family diet?
Sure. So, like I said, I'm Kathy Snyder. I'm a certified health coach and a nutritionist, and I'm real happy to be here presenting at this program. And some of what we're talking about today is just working on a variety of fruits and vegetables and a variety of whole grains and fresh meats. And I think providing the variety, you will get a better selection of nutrients and also will avoid probably food sensitivities and issues like that when you spread it out and you're not just focusing on the standards. Like the, you know, a lot of people gravitate towards just carrots or celery or apples, you know, so just kind of expanding your knowledge, trying new things, and like Dr. Basio said, eating the rainbow. It just kind of ensures you're getting phytonutrients and different categories of vitamins and minerals and just overall better health.
Kale is everywhere. Come on. It's like I'm getting to the point where I think Coca-Cola is going to have a kale flavor in their next round of freaky little cans. What's the deal with kale?
Well, it is a superfood. It has many health benefits, but it's not for everybody. It does have a little bitter, you know, a little bit of bitter taste, so not everybody is going to love kale. It's a great choice, but you know, you talked about how do we introduce this to our families, and sometimes it's tough. The things that are a little more bitter, the children have a harder time. Their taste buds just don't adapt well. So I'm, you know, an advocate of hiding those things in their food in any way you can. And it's if you make a sauce, a ratatouille-type sauce, and you could throw every vegetable under the sun and puree it. So the kids are not having the sensitivity to their tongue and the taste. It's just smoother. And you put it on a pizza, something that they're more accustomed to eating to. they don't even know that they're getting the benefits, you know, and then have them decorate their pizza with a variety of fruit, vegetables, and again, you're adding more to it. And so incorporating fun into it, of course, with kids is always a better way, and getting them involved. And we talk about a lot of that today, about getting the family involved in making the choices and helping with the food preparation, getting their snacks ready so that they're making better and healthier choices. And I think that's what it's all about.
Dr. Bossio pointed out quite appropriately that while folks are seeking better ways to eat, so is the food industry in making people think that they're getting something that's better for them when it may not be. And I made the joke about the kale cola, but you go into stores now and more of the aisles seem to be populated with products with familiar names that may not be have had contents that are as good for us as they should be, who are touting all kinds of natural and organic and integrated things like kale and other types of vegetables in them. What are a couple things that folks need to be very, very careful for? Reading the label seems sort of academic, but that's really what it's all about, isn't it?
That's true. And first, I want to applaud the industry for trying to move in the right direction. I think their intentions are good, and it's important. They realize people don't want toxins in their food, and they want more whole foods, so bravo. You know, they're moving in the right direction. But people have to realize that marketing is their forte, and so if any box of food has a health claim on it, I would kind of steer away from it. Health claims are usually just that. They're claims, and they don't back them up very well. Also, looking at the labels, if it has a lot of ingredients that you don't understand what they are, it's not a whole food, and you really want to move closer to whole foods to be healthy. So moving in the right direction, but still have a little bit of work to do with that.
Great. Yeah. And we talked about sugar. Let's close talking about salt.
Salt. Ah, so salt is a very controversial subject. A lot of people think salt is bad, and some people realize we do need salt in our diet. So there's a lot of studies out there going both ways. I think we're seeing that being hypersensitive about salt is not necessary, that our bodies need salt as one of the essential minerals.
Although, I guess, looking at labels for the comparative amount of sodium versus everything else in it is a good practice.
Absolutely. I think that companies do go over the top with both salt and sugar in order, because they know they're addictive. They make us drive back and get those foods if they've got high fats, salts, and sugars. They know it's a recipe for success to get us to be repeat buyers. So they do amp it up more than needed. And, you know, I advocate making as much food on your own as you can, and you can control the amount of sodium and sugar and all the ingredients that go into it.
Here from today's Parent Empowerment University in Newtown, Kathy Snyder, a nutritionist. Learn more about what she has to offer at KathySnyderWellness.com. That's Kathy with a C at the front and a Y at the end. Snyder with a Y as well. KathySnyderWellness.com and Dr. Deb Bossio. Dr. Bossio, where do folks learn more about or meet you?
You can go onto my website, which is NaturallyWellFamilyMedicine.com, or you could just Google Dr. Deb Bossio in Ridgefield and you'll find me that way as well.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
All right, back to the relative quiet of the pre-lunch hour here at the 2018 Parent Empowerment University, presented by the Newtown Parent Connection. NewtownParentConnection.org is the place to go if you want to learn more about the great work that this organization is doing, not just throughout Newtown and Western Connecticut, but as you heard from founder Dori Carolyn, is now getting attention from all over the United States and beyond. We're pleased to be here with Charlie Manos. He's been a professor at the Parent University before, and he is presenting two workshops today on connection, compassion, and communication, three subjects that are great in theory, Charlie, but I guess kind of hard to apply in practice. practice. Tell us a little bit about what your plans are for the workshops and how you're going to help impart on parents both the ability to understand these three important things, but more importantly, how to put them in practice in this busy world that we're living in.
I think that's such a great, great question. I think, you know, we live in a very fast-paced, technologically oriented society. People are overextended, running in a million different directions, and have really lost the capacity to be connected to the people who care most about them and who they care the most about. So this workshop is really an attempt to kind of put together the concept of connection, compassion, and communication, and how do families can do that in a, on a day-to-day basis.
And you're not only a school psychologist by profession, but also a licensed marriage and family therapist. So it begs the question, how much of what is going on with our kids in school today is coming home and having such an impact on parents that you may actually find yourself spending time in a marriage and family therapy session mm-hmm. talking about school or find yourself in a school environment talking about issues that are going on mm-hmm. in the parents' marriage?
Well, that is that's another great question. I think it's almost impossible to separate the two because kids come to school. They may be stressed with issues at home. It could be family stress. It could be socioeconomic issues. You know, we live at a time now where addictions are at an incredibly high rate. So those problems can be brought into school. And then there's the stress of school, the pressures of getting into college, the pressures of work, the demands and expectations on our kids. So those two things may really kind of come together and may cause enormous stress in our kids. Where connection is important around these issues is that perhaps parents and families may not be able to control all of those issues, but the connection piece is the ability to kind of get close to kids enough so they can begin to talk about them. Because without connection, compassion, understanding, even when there are problems that are beyond the control of families, the ability to understand them, I think this is where I think the issue of connection is such a critical issue.
You talk a little bit in your workshops today about technology and social media. You and I mm-hmm. come from an age where the most amazing thing was the Texas Instrument calculator, and we would watch the astronauts landing on the moon with the technology that is laughable almost today. And by today's standards, we have young people who are walking around addicted, for lack of a better term, to the, and parents, all of us too, I guess, it's to some extent, maybe addicted to our handheld, our mobile device. But happily, just in the past year or so, I've started to see a real push from professionals, mental health workers, educators, and others to begin to try to steer people to putting that technology down. Do you think we've hit the wall in terms of our loss of the face-to-face versus the face-to-screen connection? As he reaches for his mobile device, right? Mine was that's okay. Mine was vibrating, and I was so tempted to reach for it at the same time. So it's a very appropriate moment here in the impromptu moment in the interview.
Was a great moment there. I think we haven't hit a wall in terms of are really facing how technology has gotten in the way of our relationships. I think we're talking about it more. But I'm not sure we're there yet. I think that what happens is issues come up, cyberbullying, kids who are disconnected and depressed, kids who are the victims of bullying on social media. I think when those things become symptomatic and kids become distressed, I think we really begin to, you know, to look at the use of social media and technology. I'm not sure we're there yet in terms of seeing its serious impact on young people. I still see, when I walk into restaurants, I could see four members of a family sitting on the table all on their devices. So even when there's opportunities for people to connect, there seems to be a lack of desire and even sometimes interest. And we talked about this at the morning session, for people to put down those devices. I think part of it is the pressure to stay connected, with work, with friends. And I think those things are really creating an enormous amount of value conflict in the moment. I think we have a long way to go. I think technology has made wonderful advancements. But I think that while we talk about the impact on families, I'm not sure we're at a place where we're ready to shift completely yet. Hmm.
I don't know if you had a similar situation in your household, but I distinctly remember the point in my adolescent preteen years when my mother instituted a rule in the house that when we all sat down at dinner, we're taking the phone off the hook. Right. And so we can have dinner and your friends or your girlfriend aren't calling all the time. And the phone isn't always ringing. But in terms of, I really wanted to talk more about age relations. It seems like the onus and the challenges and the crises of the teenagers of a decade ago seem to be the crises now of the middle school age, the adolescents, the pressures and the concerns and the angst is getting younger and younger and younger. Right. Is that something you've been experiencing yourself?
And when I worked in public school and I work in private school now, I definitely have seen that adolescence has almost dropped back to 10 and 11. So even though they're technically not in puberty, that I see the kinds of exposure that young middle school kids have is at a much earlier age. Part of that is that the use of smartphones. So middle school age kids have smartphones, which means they have full exposure, you know, to the internet, which gives them a lot of exposure to areas that they're not really quite ready to comprehend. So that has advanced their age. I think, too, kids are sort of left a lot to their own, even when there's adults around, because they have exposure and access to the internet. They can be raised, in some respect, I call it being raised, by social media. And sometimes that's outside of the eyesight or supervision of adults. So I think that we will see kids who are more kind of precocious and somewhat pseudo-advanced. That is, they have some language, but they may not have they certainly don't have the depth of understanding of these issues, which can cause a lot of confusion and angst and stress for those younger teenagers.
Mm. In closing, is there some idea or tip that you can impart on parents to communicate or to get through to their young person about putting the mobile device away? You give them this thing, and then and now you want to take it away, and all my friends have it. None of their parents are taking theirs away. Why do you want me to put it down so much? Right. Have you found through feedback from all the people that you work with that there is some successful way to begin, you know, sort of getting that mobile device away from the tar baby?
Right. I think a couple of things. I think if you look back 30 years ago, parents would say to their kids, would set some limiter parameter. And the kids would say what they say today, which is, but all my friends can do it. And the parents really, or adults, did not sort of relent and sort of say, okay, you know, I'm giving to that pressure. I think your question is complex, because I think we have to have the courage sometimes to say to kids, well, all your friends may be in that situation where they have access to their phone 24 hours a day. And that may be true, but that doesn't necessarily mean, because that's happening and that the values and the culture are such that support that, that in this family that's right. I think that sometimes our families, we have to have the courage to be able to say that value in this culture is not really good for our family, because it also sort of communicates to kids that we can step above the fray sometimes. Maybe not with everything. And it may not be for anything big. It may be during the hour we're having dinner together or if we're out in a restaurant, everybody puts their devices away. But it also means that we as adults, who are also fused to our devices, have to be willing to do that as well. It's not just even a kind of a technique, but it's also about stressing a value, that we have the courage to maybe do something different than the wide majority of individuals.
So whether that team is a multi-generational family of 8 or 10 or a single mom and a single kid, it's all about kind of circling wagons, so to speak, and making your team and your brand your own and daring to be different.
Absolutely. I love the metaphor of circling the wagons, because I think we've gone away from that. I think we've thrown away a lot of the values that I think were really helpful for kids. And while we'll never be able to go back to that time, I think if we can take some of that really works in terms of supporting kids. And I think it's okay for kids to be upset and be disappointed when we set a parameter that's really good for them, because in the long term, they're going to feel good about us being able to take that position.
And it's okay for the parent to say no, it will not have life-altering negative effects on that child.
I can pretty much guarantee that, yeah.
And he knows, Charlie Manos, presenting here at the 2018 Parent University with the Newtown Parent Connection, his workshops on connection, compassion, and communication. Charlie, if folks want to send an email or have a question for you, is there a good way for them to learn more about you?
Sure, I'll give you my email address that they can email me at. Mm-hmm. It's cmanos@pinnacle-ct.org.
And that's Manos, M-A-N-O-S. Charlie Manos here. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host and do not necessarily represent the views of Connoisseur Media. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a community calendar item relevant to the audience and communities we serve, you must make a request for consideration in writing via email to me at john.voket@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file, reflecting the full scope of our station's responsiveness to critical issues in the communities we serve, can be viewed upon request weekdays during normal business hours in the New Haven area at 440 Wheelers Farms Road in Milford, and for our Hartford stations at 869 Blue Hills Avenue in Bloomfield. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. This is John Voket, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Join us again at this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. Don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab at our radio station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.